An American scientist, I'll give you his name later, but he's a biologist and past president of Stanford University's Center for Conservation Biology, compared statistics on population growth. Remember, he's just working from statistics here. These are the gathered information that's readily available to us today. You can get on the internet and find it rather quickly. But he's working in working with this information, this data. He looks at the population growth stats and also statistics concerning food supplies. And then he did the math, without going into detail how he did that, but he did the math. And he came to some very startling, mind-numbing, and absolutely terrifying conclusions. He said that inside the next two decades, not two centuries, not 50, 7,500 years, inside the next two decades, hundreds of millions of people will starve in spite of crash programs on our part and doing everything we can to put the brakes on this process. That's when he said two decades. But that scenario, he said, is perhaps a little bit on the optimistic side. A little bit optimistic. He said it's the best case scenario. My interpretation of his words. He said that most of the evidence suggests that within the next decade or so, massive famines will occur. And he's not talking about global warming. By the way, global warming and climate change didn't even come into this discussion. He's talking about other factors, looking at population growth, food production, and also there's something else that comes into the picture I'll tell you about in just a moment. And so he's looking at these projections based on the data. Now, in addition, as a biologist who is familiar with the amount of pesticides that we've poured into our environment, as well as the effects of those, both short-term and long-term effects of those pesticides, he predicted that within that window of about a decade or decade and a half or so, maybe up to two decades, that life expectancy for people in the United States, let alone other countries where these pesticides have been used, would drop to about 42 years. 42 years. You know, it's much higher than that now. It's in the 70s now. And that's an average, of course. And he says this is because of the toxic effects of the pesticides that we have pumped into the environment. And then in about 30 years, he says, the population will plummet. This is the global population, will plummet to about 22.6 million. Now that sounds like a big number, doesn't it? But when you realize that in 1900 there was 1.6 billion in the world, and now he's saying the population will plummet to 22.6 million, that's a lot smaller number. Especially when you compare that to the year 2000 when we had a population of 6 billion and today we're approaching 8 billion. So 22.6 million. And all of this is due to massive famines, to toxins in the environment, and other related factors. Now, can you imagine what it will be like when people begin fighting over the dwindling food supplies? Can you imagine what that would be like? Hey, you ever watch The Walking Dead? You don't. Some people don't. But if you do, you know, the problem is not the dead that are out there looking for flesh, you know, fresh flesh. It's the problem in the series, really. It's the living. Those are the ones you have to watch out for because they want what you have. All the dead want to do is just eat your flesh. So can you imagine what it'll be like when people begin fighting over dwindling food supplies? And what if you add to that devastating earthquakes and topsy-turvy weather patterns with the hurricanes and all of those terrible things? We add all that to the equation. And what kind of world do you have? And we haven't even talked about international aggression or the possibility of nuclear, chemical, or biological warfare. Maybe people will be too busy looking for food to be worried about that. I don't know. Well, when Jesus was asked about the sign of his coming and the end of the age, he said in Matthew 24, verses 6 and 7, "And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places." Now, this scientist is talking about these very things, isn't he? And he's looking at the data saying, this is what we're facing. At least when he filed the report, that's what he said. But wait a minute. I suppose there's a little bit, piece of information here that I haven't related yet that I should. You know, all this language, this talk of two decades, possibly three, when the massive, terrible reduction of population, a decade, maybe a decade and a half, all these. I didn't say from when, did I? I didn't say from when. I didn't say from today. No. This scientist said these things. That's what I told you. He said these things. When did he say them? Well, all this stuff I just gave you came out of this book. It's entitled The Population Bomb by Dr. Paul R. Ehrlich. Do you remember his name? You know, I first picked up a copy of this book because I was taking a class in a junior college that this was one of the things that we were required back in 1971. First published in 1968. Do the math. How many decades has it been since the 70s, early 70s, or in 68? Wow, the population's really diminished, hasn't it? We've all starved to death. You're not here. No, it really didn't happen that way, did it? Didn't happen that way at all. But all the dire predictions came along in this book, first published 1968, republished. This is the 1971 edition. The reason I have it, the reason I bought it in the first place, is because of that class. You see, when you are going to college classes, you're required to take certain subjects, as you all know. But some things you can get extra credits by taking these other subjects, and this is one of those other subjects. Pick up an extra credit or two by taking it. And of course, at least I always look for the easier things. Stuff you didn't have to work too hard at. So it was a class in environmental biology. And I remember we had to save a kind of a scrapbook like thing. And news headlines and whatnot and pictures and so on. Relating to the environment, food supplies, food production, population, etc., etc., etc. And come time to, you know, show our stuff that we'd collected, people looked at mine and said, "Wow, where did you get all this neat stuff?" You know, they had a little headline clipping from a newspaper, so here or there, you know, a few things. I had all these beautiful full-color photos of crop failures and the use of mixing seeds and making hybrids and how disease-prone some of those products were and all these neat, cool photos. Of course, I had a source that most of them, or I don't think any of them knew about. It's called the Plain Truth Magazine. So I was clipping all that stuff out of there. They thought, "Man, you've got some really good stuff." Yeah, you know, worked hard at it. No, but anyway, this was one of the books, and I remember very well sitting in the classroom there, and some young lady over there in the next row had these really thick glasses and kind of the nerdy type. You know what I mean? No, just she's very studious. She was reading, just taking this stuff in. She goes, "Ew." But all of that was supposed to have happened. We were supposed to have experienced this horrible devastation by the year 1985. But as it turned out, Ehrlich's predictions were, well, a little, shall we say, a little bit off? Or shall we say dead wrong? I think the latter is better. So as it turns out, we're producing more wealth, taking in more calories, not fewer, eating more, unfortunately, getting fatter, and living longer. We're not dying sooner. Lifespan is increasing as far as on the average. In many ways, we have it a lot better than our forefathers who lived in simpler times, I should say. A lot better in many ways. You know, we have brothers and sisters right here in this congregation. At least a couple of them, and look around. I'd probably name a few more if I thought about it for a little while. Who wouldn't be here with us today if not for advancements in medical science? That's certainly not to take anything from God. God can heal anything. But I'm just talking about medical science. You know, we got people, I have kin folks. Several of them have bypasses and stents and all kinds of things. They wouldn't be with us today. So we have all kinds of remarkable good things to report. But today, of course, we do have diseases such as swine flu and bird flu, and the latest, of course, the coronavirus. These things pop up from time to time, and that scares us, especially when we hear that, the possibility of an outbreak. It's usually a possibility more than an actual outbreak. They do have outbreaks in certain parts of certain countries. You know, the concern is it'll be here because we do, after all, communicate and travel globally nowadays. And people coming from China, for example, and the concern is that we may have an outbreak here. And sure enough, you hear of a couple of people having it. And now, sometimes in some of these situations occur, we hear about the second death. You know, the second time someone, the second death in this particular influenza outbreak or occurrence. So, you know, we have two or three deaths or ten, or sometimes it's a lot more than that. But, you know, those numbers are very low compared to what our ancestors experienced, of what people experienced in past ages when you had some kind of outbreak that took out a major portion of whole populations of whole countries. We have it pretty good to hear that only 30 people died over the last 10 years or whatever. Yeah, that's not an actual stat there, but the numbers, my point is the numbers are relatively low compared to what people in the past experienced. Now, one reason, we do have some things that are unique to our time. Apparently there is an increase, for example, in cancer, an increase in heart disease, although I hear that those rates are dropping at this point. But we do have an increase, but you know partly why that is? Partly it's because our forefathers didn't live long enough to get those things. We're living older. And so, consequently, we'll have more heart disease, more cancer. Plus, they can diagnose those things better now than they could in the past. So there are many things to consider here. It's not just, look how terrible the world is. Yeah, there's lots of problems in the world. Lots of problems in the world. But if I'd rather have what we have today or what they had back in the Middle Ages, I'll take today. Because I probably wouldn't have been as old as I am today back in the Middle Ages. I probably wouldn't have made it this far along. But anyway, this folks, is what I call, you've heard of fake news, this is fake science. Fake science. You may also remember from that same period the articles, the TV reports, etc., on how scientists were predicting another Ice Age. Did things kind of turn around since then? Are they still predicting an Ice Age? No, we keep hearing about how the Earth is warming. The polar ice caps are melting. You know, they were supposed to have already melted a whole lot more than they have. I think by the year 2000, according to some predictions from back there, today we wouldn't have the feast sites on the coastline because it'd be all underwater. Last time I checked, they weren't. So you have more, I call, fake science. Fake science. Now, how many of you remember the TV series entitled In Search Of? It was hosted by Leonard Nimoy. I love to watch that, only, you know, primarily because, you know, I took anything Mr. Spock said seriously. So I love to watch it, but when you get home, those of you who have a computer, when you get home, don't do it on your phones right now. When you get home, go to YouTube.com, and look up that. Or you can just do a Google search, Leonard Nimoy, Ice Age. You'll get it. And when you get there, first of all, you want to look for season 2, episode 23. And this was in May. It was given, I think, in May of 1978. And before you watch it, you want to have a glass of wine or a bottle of beer. And then on your second glass of wine or bottle of beer, that's when you want to click it on and watch it. And you will find it absolutely hilarious. It's not meant to be funny. It's meant to be very serious. But to hear Mr. Spock talking about the possibility, quoting scientists, of this very real ice age that was in the immediate future. You just sit there and laugh, especially if you had that beer or wine. Even more so if you've had both. And now, who'd have ever guessed it? Who'd ever thought it? We have little Ms. Greta Thunberg. You know who I'm talking about. The young lady who scolded, we have her on tape, on TV, we've seen her on YouTube and every place else, scolding heads of state for robbing her of her future. You know, I could get mad just watching that. You know, her saying, "How dare you!" But you know, I feel sorry for her because she's, in one sense, a victim. A victim because people with political motivations are using her. And so she's been trapped into this. She's been deceived by it, brought into it. And now she thinks that the heads of state and the people of this world, and so she thinks her future is being robbed. Let me tell you something. And some people say, you shouldn't be talking about these things because these things get into political territory. I don't care how political they are, but this stuff is phony. We're not facing imminent danger from global warming. We're not facing imminent danger from the increase of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Do you know what happens? Do you know what happens when you increase the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere? And sure enough, apparently we do have a relatively slight increase over years past. Do you know what effect that has? To hear some people talk, oh, it's going to melt the polar ice caps. It is not. It is not. The Earth has been a lot warmer than it's predicted to get, and it didn't do all that. But what will happen, and this is just terrible, terrible, it will increase the growing season. There'll be more food. You know, we're headed for a produce apocalypse. The Earth is greening. It's getting greener. Really, seriously. Because of the increase in carbon dioxide, because that's plant food. You know, when plants increase, you know what they do? They produce oxygen. You know, you may think that us driving our cars and flying our planes and doing all these things, you may think that we're just throwing this whole world out of balance as far as the carbon dioxide and oxygen ratio. We are not. We cannot. It's going to come back into balance whether we like it or not. We could try harder. We could drive a lot more. Everybody could just decide right now, well, I'm going to drive twice as much this next year than I did last year. We would not throw this earth out of this balance. We can't. Not going to happen. Now, I'm not suggesting that there are not real pollutants in the atmosphere. Of course there are. Air pollution, water pollution, other kind of environmental toxins and so on, things in our food supply. Yeah, of course we should be concerned about that. And of course we should care about the environment and do all we can to do what we do as far as agriculture is concerned in a way that is environmentally friendly, in a way that is sustainable. And nobody disagrees with that. What I am saying is all this stuff you hear about this coming global apocalypse due to our putting carbon dioxide, etc., into the atmosphere, it is hogwash. If that sounds too political, I don't care. That's what it is. It's hogwash. It's not going to happen. So what is this really all about? Now, at this point, let me tell you, I could launch into a discussion on setting dates and looking for the apocalypse and things of that nature. And I could take you back to the early centuries of Christianity and show you how men have been setting dates for the second coming of Christ since the second century. They kept predicting and predicting and looking at this date and that date, looking at conditions in the world, looking at famines going on in the world, looking at disease outbreaks and wars, sometimes a war lasting a century. All these terrible, terrible things in the very real world, and they kept saying, this is it, this is it, this is it, the apocalypse is near, the second coming will happen on this day. So no, it didn't happen then that date, no, it didn't happen then that date, and on and on and on it goes down to our modern times, and we still have people setting dates based on these things. Now, I could run off in that direction, but I'm not. I'm not. I'm not even going to go into that. I just went into it. But I'm going to take it in a different direction and say that actually there is absolutely nothing wrong at looking at conditions and seeing trends that are prophetically related, because I don't know if you're like me, but when I look at these things and I'm able to tie them in to prophetic trends in Scripture, then it motivates me to do better in my life, to be more careful, more vigilant in following Jesus Christ and doing the things I'm supposed to do. Are you that way as well? So I do see a trend here. I do see a trend. But it's not some kind of global apocalypse involving global warming or anything of the kind. It's not the Paul Ehrlich population bomb type of apocalypse. What I'm talking about is a trend toward using this sort of stuff to control populations. In other words, to create a beast system that would seize control, use these things to control. Just as Little Miss Greta has been used by people for political expediency. So when people, when you have what you have here, you have a movement designed to tell you that the end is imminent, that we've brought it on ourselves, and things have to be radically changed. And how do you do that? Just ask people to do it? No. You have to have a strong central power that enforces it. So the question for me is, who is like the beast? That, by the way, is the title of the sermon. Who is like the beast? And I say that there's a trend that we see, and I don't know exactly how this one will play out, but a trend that we see, it's been around for a long time, is one of seizing control of vast populations based on the idea that they have to be controlled or it's just not going to work. That's what we see going on, I do believe. That's why you have more people today advocating a socialistic system, more people advocating a one world government. Tear down the borders, build bridges, not walls, and all of that stuff. It's all about establishing a world order, a one world government in the minds of some. I'm not saying that I'm not into conspiracy theories, but I am saying that there is a movement in that direction in the minds of some people. And you have some people like, let's say, the Pope, who think that way. He does. He really does. You know, I used to think that the papacy would return to the old hardcore traditionalism of the Middle Ages. And that would be the rise of the papacy in the end time. That once again, they'd be like the Inquisition of old, when conservative Bible believers would be, you know, stretched on the rack and all the terrible things that happened to them. And that some terrible things did happen at the hands of the papacy back in those centuries, in centuries past. I used to think that's the way it would be, but you know, I look at the papacy today, and what is it? Even the Catholics don't like it. They're complaining about it. They're concerned about it. You could go to the internet, get on YouTube, and find long-time faithful Catholic bishops complaining about this Pope. and how he has surrounded himself with homosexuals. He shielded these predators from the law. He's describing as the worst of the worst. They're using some very, very, very harsh language in describing this man. Some have said that he hates the United States of America. He hates us. He does not understand capitalism at all. He is at heart a communist. And he wants to have this one world government. And of course, it no longer would it be the Catholicism of old. Oh, no, no. It would be a very liberal form and take in far more religions. Forming a kind of, well, it's a new kind of, a new breed of Catholicism, you might say. Not the Catholicism of old, but I'm speculating there. I am. But the point is, when you look at Revelation 13, we'll look at that today. When you look at that, you see a system in place, and it has had different manifestations in different times. The original manifestation of the beast that John sees come up out of the sea was Imperial Rome. That was the original. The second beast that arises out of the earth in Revelation 13, also called the false prophet, is a manifestation in its original form, a manifestation of the imperial cult that enforced worship of Caesar. In other words, enforce worship of the state. You have a church-state relationship there, a religion-state relationship. And of course, this is what certain modern religionists want as well. The papacy and others associated with it being in collusion with the state or governmental powers in bringing about a governmental system that then can control the nations under its umbrella. So I see something here that I think may be a trend leading toward that kind of situation. Let's look at Revelation 13, verse 1. And I saw a beast rising out of the sea with 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 diadems on its horns and blasphemous names on its head. Now, the people who first received this, the people in the 7 churches of Asia, they didn't want to scratch their heads and wonder, well, who in the world could this? What is this about? They knew Daniel 7. They knew Daniel 7. They could recognize the symbolism. And they also lived under the Roman emperors. Whether this was written in the 60s, as some people believe, or in the 90s, as others believe. You know, in other words, whether it's under Nero or under Domitian, it doesn't really matter, because the Roman Empire was the Roman Empire. The people would have recognized the description here. So they knew exactly who this was talking about. But remember, that's the earliest manifestation of this beast. Because we're told right away in Revelation, you know, in the first chapter, we're told that these things, write down these things, it must soon take place. The time is near. Not talking about off, way off in the future. So yes, there was a manifestation of this beast and false prophet conglomerate in the first century. The Roman Empire and the imperial cult. But we see also in chapter 19, hold your place here and look over there for just a moment. In chapter 19, which is very clearly a description of the second coming of Christ, that obviously hasn't happened yet. It is in the future. But what you find here is when he returns, we won't read the whole account, but it starts in verse 11. And very clearly the one is described coming on a white horse. He's called the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. We know who that is. This is Christ. And you read in verse 19, and I saw the beast. Well, there he's still around, isn't he? At the time of the second coming. And I saw the beast and the kings of the earth with their armies gathered to make war against him who was sitting on the horse and against his army. And the beast was captured, and with it the false prophet, that's the second beast, the beast out of the earth, called the false prophet, who in its presence had done the signs by which he deceived those who had received the mark of the beast and those who had worshipped its image. These two were thrown alive into the lake of fire that burns with sulfur. So this is a description of this system comprised of a government and religious aspect being cast into, being, in other words, being terminated, brought to its end. But the point is, it existed in the first century. It has had been manifested in various forms, I would say, in the later Roman Empire, in the papacy, in the Middle Ages, down through the centuries. It has been it's been manifest in various forms. And in the end time, then, there will be a final manifestation of it. But it's the same kind of system. You have the powerful government and the religious aspect to enforce worship of the authority itself. And that's what the false prophet does. So back to chapter 13. You continue on. Goes on to describe the beast. In verse 3 it says, one of its heads seemed to have a mortal wound, but its mortal wound was healed, and the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast. And they worshiped the dragon, for he had given his authority to the beast. So who is behind this power that has existed then and now will exist in the end time? It's the dragon. And who is the dragon? That old serpent, Satan the devil. For he had given his authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like the beast, and who can fight against him? That means you have to have this a rather powerful central authority there, doesn't it? And who can fight against it? And the beast was given a mouth uttering haughty and blasphemous words, and it was allowed to exercise authority for 42 months. It goes on to describe that, of course, that the beast's enemy, the saints. And then we won't read the whole account here, but then you have the description of the second beast in verse 11. Remember, later he's called the false prophet. So then I saw another beast rising out of the earth, and this is not the United States of America, the Seventh-day Adventist claim. That's not what it's talking about here. They believe that this second beast is the United States. No, it's not. In its original form, it was, as I said, the imperial cult, but in later times, it was the papacy. And in the time of the end, it'll be something like what we have seen in the past. A religious power, in other words, in collusion with the governmental power and actually causing people to submit to it and worship it, as it were. Then I saw another beast rising out of the earth. It had two horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. It exercises all the authority of the first beast in its presence and makes the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast. So that's what his role is. He's a promoter. He promotes the first beast. It says, then you had this deadly wound. It says, let's skip on to verse 16. Also, it causes all, both small and great, both rich and poor, both free and slave, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead so that no one can buy or sell. It has control of the economy. It has control. In other words, it can control through sanctions. It can control through sanctions. No one can buy or sell unless he has the mark, that is, the name of the beast or the number of his name. Now, without getting into what that may be, I'd rather just say simply that it involves allegiance to the beast. You either are in allegiance to the beast, you swear you're loyal to the beast, whether it's an individual or a nation. You swear your loyalty to the beast, or you're left out economically. It's a very powerful tool. And so you see here, this is how it will be carried out. It says, this calls for wisdom and so on about the number, which is the mark of the beast, number 666, and so on. But here we have the beast, and we have the question, who is like the beast? In other words, that's what the world will say. That's what the world has said in the past. They said it to the Roman Empire in the past. Who is like this great power, this great government? Of course, it fell, but it has had other resurrections in different forms. But nevertheless, people have had that. They basically bowed down to the Caesars. They bowed down, in other words, they worshiped the government. And being motivated by and being prompted by the second beast, which, as I said, early on was the imperial cult, later was another religious power, and in the time of the end, we can expect to see this same pattern, this same kind of thing developing. So this was, I just wanted to call your attention to this because I thought it very interesting that what we see in the world, what we've seen since this kind of material has been coming out, And what we see today and all the dire warnings about what we're doing to the planet and how we must do something immediately or else. You know, I think the number of the years, what is it, 12 years now? We have only 12 years left or it's going to be too late, all this kind of talk. And the people who are talking that talk are the people who are encouraging big, big, powerful governments that can take control over the lives of individuals and over nations. And people who are wanting a global community, which means if you're going to control this sort of thing throughout the world, then you've got to have this central authority, and all other nations must fall under its umbrella, or they're left out of the picture economically. They suffer economic privation. So I thought it was interesting, and I thought it was something that, even though I'm not going to be dogmatic about all that, I do say that when we see trends like that in the world, it's helpful to take a look at them, because I have found that when I see things like that, and wonder about them, think about them, align them with biblical prophecy, rather than set dates or say we only have such and such amount of time left or anything like that, when I see the trend and see how these things could be unfolding before our very eyes, then I am motivated to double my efforts in following Jesus Christ and becoming more like Him. And isn't that really what it's all about? Amen.